That stained glass is, I don't know if I've been here when the sun's been shining. It's really pretty from there. It's a little hard to see you from up here. I want to say thank you for having us. We've been doing a trip from Edmonton to Vancouver for as long as I can remember, all the way back to 98. I'm from a different era, and that's hard for me to say. I was born in the 1900s. And for some of us, that doesn't sound old enough. And for others, who knows what the 1900s are. But we've been coming for a long time. And I've slept underneath those pews. I slept under those stairs one time, just trying to get away from the noise of other people. But we keep coming back. And every time we come back, I'm reminded again of why we do this. Like, why are we here and what we're doing? For those of you who don't know, Mount Carmel is a one-year school where young Christians can come after high school, and they take courses, and we work alongside each other, we serve alongside each other, and we grow together to figure out how to live as Christians in the world. How do you become a follower of Jesus and be an adult? What does that look like, and how do you develop habits that allow you to become that? So we have a lot of students. God has been very good to us this year. We're at about our max. I don't know how many more we can effectively do this with. But there are 36 students this year. I'd like to invite two of them up now just to give you a couple of quick answers, maybe honest answers, of where they're at. So what I'll get you to do is just introduce yourself, maybe from the mic, and then tell us why you came to Carmel.
Sure. Hello. My name is Ryan. I came to Mount Carmel Bible School through some pretty funny circumstances, which is too long of a story to share here, but believe me when I say that the Lord really worked to bring me into this community, and He's really been teaching me this year how to live in a community with other Christians and relating to them and just living in that support daily. That's been really good for my faith. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Gregory. I came to Mount Carmel because I had been feeling like a little bit lukewarm in my faith, and I came to Mount Carmel looking to become more zealous for God, and I want more of that in my life. I've learned in Mount Carmel, specifically in Ty's class, that recently, and I can see to myself, recently young Christians separate their Christian from their life. And through Ty's class, we've been learning how to undo that separation we put in between Christian and life. So, yeah.
All right. Oh, thanks, guys.
Ideally, we do this trip year after year, and students get exposed to the Lower East Side and see some, I guess it's just a bigger picture. The people who are hurting in every city. There's just more to look at here, and it's a little more overwhelming, maybe. Here are my notes, sometimes not as practiced as I would like to be. But we come back year after year, and year after year, they're still there, and the hurt is still there. And my questions get bigger. And throughout the week, inevitably, students begin to ask, is this making a difference? Like, does this matter at all? Does it matter that we go there, that we try and talk, that we try and extend some care, some real love, some real concern? Does it matter that we handed out another plate of food today? And I started to think that I've been doing this for a little while, and I still have some of the same questions. And so if you'll have patience with me, I kind of want to walk through a little bit of my own story and how I came to faith, and then maybe leave you with some encouragement. I didn't grow up going to church. I didn't have a youth group that had friends that steered me towards God's truth. I had an extended family that was very faithful. But when my father left the house, he wanted to make his own choices, and he did. And my mother was the firstborn of a farming family that was just very faithful. And so she remained very faithful, but as a family, we just didn't go to church. In our home, both my parents grew up knowing how to love like Jesus because that's how they grew up, and that's what they passed on to us. So even though I wasn't in church, I knew that sometimes you had to forgive. Sometimes you were gracious. You didn't speak poorly of your family. You worked hard. And all the things that were proper were still proper. But I didn't have anyone shaping my heart in the way of Jesus. I knew God was out there. I had this idea that he was good, but I didn't know him. And the relationship with my own father was difficult. He was an alcoholic. He wasn't there. He was like lots of dads. That father-son relationship was difficult. And so I had a really difficult time trusting people with my emotions, with my heart. I struggled with that a great deal. In the summers, I would sometimes go and visit my grandfather, and I would stay at their house. And my grandfather, from the time of the war till the time he died, was involved in the church in various capacities as a teacher, as a pastor. And he had very good habits. Downstairs, he had a study in his home. And I didn't know what happened down there, but every time I would wake up early in the morning, you know, in the summer when that morning light wakes you up and you're a kid and you don't like it, but you can't sleep anymore because it's too bright, I would sneak downstairs to find out what he was doing in that room. And I was always afraid to turn the corner and be seen by him because I didn't know. I just knew every morning he was down there. And one afternoon, I decided I had to know what he was doing in that room in the mornings. And it's probably not a surprise to you, but for me, when I turned the corner into that room, there was a desk, and on it was a Bible and a notepad and a pencil. And then on his desk above it was a little plaque that had a section of Numbers 11:23. And it just had the words calligraphied on it, "Is the Lord's arm too short?" And that stuck with me. That's burned into my mind. Later in my life, I would start to find out what that verse meant. It was at a time when Moses was leading the Israelites through their wanderings, and the people were complaining about a lack of meat. And the Lord told them, "I will give you meat not for a day, not for 2 days, not for a week, not for 10 days, not for 20 days. I'll give you meat for a month, so much that you'll find it loathsome. It'll come out of your nose. It'll be so much." And Moses says, "How will this be? Even if we slaughtered all the animals we have, how?" And the Lord responds, "Is the Lord's arm too short? You will now see whether or not what I say will come true for you." And sure enough, the Lord delivers quail. But I remembered seeing that plaque and wondering the context in which my grandfather saw it. And looking back at my own life from where I am, it makes more sense to me now. Because if you had told me as a kid that I would stand in front of anyone, anywhere, and say anything, I would say, "You're crazy. What am I going to say to anyone about anything ever? I was just trying to make it through school." I had no idea about what my life was about. I had no understanding about how to live and love well. These were outside of my world. But when I look back on my story now, I'm reminded that a lot of what brought me to where I am today was other people, faithful people, who woke up in the morning, would go down to that place where they read the word, open their hearts to God and say, "What will you have me do today?" And then by just a small faithful act, just did something small. And so when I was 16, my grandmother sent me a birthday card. "Happy birthday." I don't even remember if the card said happy birthday, but I do know that it said, "You're old enough to get your driver's license now. You should go to church." And I said, "Thanks, Grandma." But I thought about it. One card, one encouragement, used to go to church. I was playing hockey at the time, and I thought I was a shoe-in for this team, so I just didn't really try. And they let me go. And then I had to play on this other team, and I was really sad about it. However, there was a Christian guy on that team. And he said, "Hey, you should go to church." And I said, "Yeah, maybe." I started to get all these little pushes. Not big acts, but faithful acts. Someone just faithfully extending some honest direction. One time I did go to church. I thought, this isn't that bad. Someone in Edmonton had thought, is this kid's going to church? Then we need to have him to come to camp. I was a farm kid. I hadn't been on a plane ever. I got a phone call from a guy I knew by association, and he said, "I'd like you to come to camp." And I said, "What are you talking about? You don't even know who I am. Do you know how confused I am about life?" I didn't even know those words. But he said, "I'd like to buy you a plane ticket to bring you up to counselor training." And I said, "I would love to go on a plane. I'll see you there." So as a teenager, I remember being in high school and my friend Ryan said, "What are you doing?" I said, I'm flying to Edmonton. And he's like, "For what?" I'm like, "Oh, so I can counsel at a Metal Lodge Bible camp." And he's like, "What?" I'm like, "I'm going on a plane, Ryan. A plane. Do you understand that?" Anyway, I got peanuts, a Coke, and he picked me up at the airport. And I was so overwhelmed by the fact that he did it. I said, "Why did you do this for me?" And he so calmly, I remember, he just held the steering wheel and he looked kind of sideways at me and he said, "Let's call it an investment." And that was all he said about it. And I said, "An investment in what? My adventure time? Okay." But I took the plane ride and I went to counselor training camp. And then I went to camp. Do you know what God does when he takes you from where you're at and puts you alongside someone who is just like you but younger? And your heart kind of holds theirs and you think, "I don't want this kid to feel how I felt. I want to save him from that. So how do I do that?" And in this weird way, this opportunity to be used by God turned my heart to God to ask real questions. "God, help me. Help me help him." And I started to work through those questions that I had in my heart. Small acts of faithfulness by people who would open the Word and then let God fill them up. And when you say, "God, use me today," just a small act of faithfulness. "Hey, you should counsel. You should come to church. Why don't you come hang out with us this weekend?" I still had no idea that I would ever find myself in the position that I am. And I wouldn't have believed you if you told me. I was 19, 20. And I remember in university sciences, I was starting to ask questions, like real ones, where I really needed to know if God was real. So I was studying evolutionary sciences. And they gave me the rundown of the evolutionary process as it would happen purely by science. But I remember the teacher saying, she left room to question. She said, "This experiment's not really repeatable. We don't really believe this could happen." But I went to her after and I said, How are you teaching this if the theory is this flawed?" And she just shrugged and she said, "It's the best we have." And I said, "I'm betting eternity on the best we have? Lady, you're supposed to be smart." In another class, I had another prof. We were examining flower stamens under a microscope. And he stopped the class and he said these words. This is a direct quote. "I'm not a Bible thumper. But when you look at this level of design and intricacy, you have to struggle with the idea that this could not have happened by chance. It is too intricate, too designed." And so while I went in search of, "Is God real?" God steered me back to him through the voices of people who I don't know if they were planning on being God's messengers to me that day. But they sure were. They turned me back. And I started to think really seriously about my faith and about God. And I started to ask myself, what is happening? What is this all about? I applied to a transfer program at the University of Calgary. I was going to go into physics. I had finished playing junior hockey. And hockey took a lot of my life. And I kind of wanted it to give me something back. So I thought if it would pay for an education, that would be good. And I got a chance to go out to Concordia, which was a Christian university, to play hockey. And at some point along the way, I had stopped at Mount Carmel for a youth event. And I had these three things on my radar. And I didn't know what to do. And I thought, well, maybe I'll ask God what to do. And I'll leave it with Him. So I did. I prayed and I said, Lord, whichever application comes back first, that's what I'll do. And so I sent out all three applications and I waited. And Mount Carmel came back first. And I remembered thinking at that moment, I don't know if I really wanted God to make the decision. I remember thinking, I think I wanted to play hockey. But because I had prayed and I believed God was shaping something, I didn't want to miss it. If God was good and He was real, then I wanted His life for me. So that letter came in. I sent in my application. And that changed pretty much everything. I don't know if you're younger, if you think about the future very much. Like, how are you going to be as an adult? I don't know if many of us as adults ever thought, oh yeah, this is exactly the way I planned it. I know now all the things I thought I would know when I was a kid. The only thing I know now is that if my kids knew how little I knew about what I was saying, they would have a field day with that. Because I don't know the answers. I don't have all the answers. I thought you'd become an adult and you would just know all the things. But I didn't. But Carmel started me down a road where I knew a God who did. I don't want to let go of this small act of faithfulness. The one thing that drew me to Carmel at that youth event was I saw a guy in his 30s talking with teenagers. And he wasn't trying to impress them. He wasn't cool. He wasn't anything. He just cared. And I remember being that high school kid who was like, you're just in a different world of trying to fit in with different people. But I saw this guy, and he just knew how to relate and care for teenagers. And I thought inside, I held on to it. I'm like, if I could become an adult who could relate to people like that, that would be pretty great. And that's what put Carmel on the radar for me. Again, just a small act of extending real concern to a young person to say, I care about you. And I knew I wanted that. There was a man in our church who did a little Bible study for me and three other guys. And it was Bruce Wilkinson's Seven Laws of the Learner. Maybe some of you took that too. Would be a way back memory. However, the Seven Laws of the Learner course was great. But what stuck out to me was at the end of each meeting, we would pray and we'd close. It doesn't matter. We'd get to the door of his house, and without fail, every time, he would stop and he'd say, hey, guys, don't take it easy. And I hated that he said that because it was so nerdy. However, it got deep inside me. And every time I thought, I don't have to read, I don't need to pray, I can hear his voice in my head, don't take it easy. And it's not because you're going to get in trouble. His don't take it easy was, don't miss out. Don't miss this one. God has good for you. Don't miss it. Don't get lazy and miss the bus. Keep your heart close to His. He's got good things for you. And I knew that. So again, a man who learned how to care for young people. Another guy who just passed on a simple message. But it got in, and it stuck. Okay. When I arrived at Carmel as a student, it changed everything. I went back. It helped me understand how to love people. I had shut off emotionally completely. That was how I coped with my dad. At Carmel, I had also said to the class, by way of trying to bully myself into doing it, that I had never told my dad I loved him. And I'd never heard it. But I was going to find a way. But that meant forgiving in my heart. That meant trying to actually say words to him I've never said. But that's something that God can do. This isn't meat for 600,000. This is one heart trying to forgive a hurt. This is one heart trying to love something broken. And that's a miracle in itself. I don't know what your relationships are like, but I'm sure they're not perfect. I know what it's like to care for people who betray a trust, who use you, who misunderstand you. I know what it's like to have kids who, despite your best efforts, do their own thing. And it hurts. And I want good for them, but I can't save them from that. I can't make those choices for them. I know what it's like to hurt like that. And in my own heart, I believe there is a big miracle that happens when I believe that God's not done yet. So I want to leave you with some encouragement to know that these questions, they're shaping. These questions are the ones that draw my heart back to God to say, I can't, and you must. That little plaque, "Is the Lord's arm too short," was the one that hung in my mind every time I thought about my dad. I've been at Mount Carmel for 23 years, and that's a long time. It's a long time to think, what am I doing here? Because you can come through a year with students and see the best of them. You can see potential in them. You can see a future where God uses them in lots of ways. Then you can meet them 7 years later and find that they've wandered so far from the direction they'd set themselves on. It's hard to understand or even recognize them as the same person. And you start to wonder, what difference am I making here? It's nice to be along for the ride, but really, what difference are we making? And I don't know what it's like for you. I'm really encouraged to be here. I'm from a little church, about 40 people, but the oldest of us are in their 50s. And I miss having the ability to look across the pew and see someone who's been walking with God that much further, to give me that reassurance of knowing that it was good when I started, it was good when I was in, and it's still good now. I need that encouragement. But I also know that during those years it gets tough. And maybe you do wonder, what is the point of all this? Why are we still coming to prayer meetings week after week? Would it matter if I didn't go? Why are we still serving? Why are we still committing ourselves to do this thing with this other group? Why are we doing all this stuff? There are better clubs to be a part of. Right? If you were just looking for something to do, there are better things to do if Jesus isn't in it. But if he is, then that changes everything. What got me here was a bunch of people being faithful to what God asked them to do. So small steps. What has kept me here is this idea that, again, small steps. God is going to make use of me in small ways I may or may not know. I hang on to this faith largely because I have this relationship with my dad that for a long time was fractured. Sorry, I'm skipping a bunch, but I feel like maybe you're still tracking, so it's okay. When I was 27, married, had a little kid and one on the way, my dad phoned me and he had said, "I don't live with your mother anymore, so if you want to talk to me, here's my number." And in my heart, I thought, why would I want to talk to you? Like, why are you even calling me? You've never talked to me ever. Like, what are you? No. All of us kids had moved out. We'd started families of our own. And my mom loved my dad, but she just couldn't watch him drink himself to death. So, she said, "You need to get some help." Is the Lord's arm too short? Well, I want to say no. My dad did get help. They were separated for a long time, 6 months while he tried to figure it out on his own, but then he decided he would make a change. So he started going to meetings. He tried to stop drinking. My mom went with him to meetings. And then the next year, they started to go on dates. My parents went on a date and they walked around East Lake and held hands. And when you're 28 and get to watch your parents fall in love, it's pretty amazing. I watched my dad become the husband he could have been all those years. I have little kids who have no idea who my dad was. All they know is the grandfather they have, and they call him Buster. That's his name, and they love Buster. Buster drives hours to watch them play hockey games. He bought a little pony so he could like saddle them up and take them for rides when they come. He's the shoulder that my sisters cry on when their life got tough. He's the dad I wanted but didn't have. He's the dad who now I don't recognize from my youth. All those memories of pain and loss have slowly been redeemed and made new by the memories I have with him now. And I know his mother prayed for him her whole life. I prayed for him as long as I knew how. My mom prayed for him. And for a long time, it seemed so dark that there was no hope. Why are we doing this? What is the point of this? But I have a story I get to tell where one day he saw himself as he truly was, in need of a Savior. And he came back to faith. I really enjoy singing these hymns because on Sunday nights, if I'm at my parents', he'll have the Gator Gospel Hour on. And he still knows all those songs he sang as a child. And now I can hear him singing in the quietness of his rocking chair in a room of the Savior that gave him a second shot at becoming the man he wanted to be. And so I want to tell you that I think there's value in this. I want the grand gesture. I want God to give me a moment where I can sacrifice everything in one grand gesture that'll cost me everything and be done with it. But I don't know that's what God's calling me to. That's not how God used the people in my life. It was faithful. It was every day. Wake up, read your Bible, pray, and then do His work. All those voices that spoke into my life, and maybe yours too. I don't know what brought you here today. I don't know what turned your heart to Jesus and made you say, yes, this is something I want. But my guess is, it was a lot of faithful people just pointing you back towards what is good. As often as we come down here, the poor are always with us. And I don't know if we're making a difference, but I do know that God is going to use us in ways that I'm not going to know. That maybe that act of faithfulness today is going to be what matters. That maybe today the fact that I showed up and said, how are you today? Would be the day where they finally said, God, if you're out there, if anyone cares at all, just tell me. All I'll know is I said, how are you today? I won't know what that's done in their heart. I don't get to see all that. With the school, we go up to the same communities in Northern Alberta, the First Nations communities, and we stay there year after year. And we get to live among them and work in the schools for a time. But we've been doing it so long that there are children that I remember being with in grade 2. Rocky Na wanted to play hockey. It was minus 30. He was in a t-shirt. We played street hockey till 11:30. He just would not stop playing. And the minute classes ended, he'd be right at the door. You want to play hockey? No, I do not. But we did. And we played and we played. And every year, Rocky would get older and a little more distant. And I started to see Rocky separate himself. And one year, I went back, and Rocky was 6'4", and had a very distant look in his eyes. He remembered who I was. But he was not the same anymore. And I don't know where he is. But for those 7 years we're back in the same communities, I start to again measure, like, God, is this worth it? Is this effort worth it? Are we making a difference? And I don't know. But that's not for me to say. I did not know I would be here. If at 18, maybe at your 18, someone told you the life you would live, would you sign up for it? I don't know if I would. I sometimes read the story of Moses and I wonder when he said, God, I can't do this. God hadn't told them much. He just asked them to go, to lead. What Moses didn't see was the road ahead. The plagues, the Exodus, the parting of the Red Sea. He didn't see himself receiving the Ten Commandments twice. He didn't see the problems that would come among the people. He didn't see himself losing his patience and striking the rock at Meribah. And I don't think he saw his death having never entered the Promised Land. If God had showed him all those things, would he have signed up? Don't know. If God had showed me the road I had to walk to get here, I would say, at 18? No, I wouldn't do it. I wasn't capable then. I didn't have faith for that then. I couldn't see how good God was then. But I want to tell you I'm not done yet. We come to the Lower East Side and we serve. Year after year, God brings new students and we do our best to let them see what we see, what God sees in them, and point them in the direction of Jesus. Because that's, I don't have a better advice to give. I don't have better wisdom to give. And as I do that, I learn more about myself. Does God ever surprise you? Like when someone gets it, when they really understand they're loved, did you really see them going as far as they did? I don't know if anyone else would have seen me up here. I was just a kid. I don't know where you see yourself. I don't know if you see your kids. All I know is I know I see this Jesus who loves me more than I can imagine. I see a chance to live well, to love well, to serve well, to grow. I don't know how people make marriage without Jesus. I don't know how you do it. It's the small acts. It's the small acts of faithfulness. It's why I go put gas in the vehicle for my wife. She hates doing that. So do I. But I'll do it for her. Every morning my wife will make coffee. Most days she'll even bring me coffee. It's not because she likes me every morning. It's because she loves Jesus every morning. This is an act of service that you do, not for the other, but for Jesus. I want to serve well. I want to know what it is to be so, like, I love you guys, but man, you are annoying sometimes. You guys didn't have to ride down here in the van with him. 15 hours of them. Oof. I can't go deaf fast enough. However, I want to serve well. And when I can't, Jesus does. And when I run out of patience, Jesus gives me more. And when I think they're being annoying, what they're really needing is more love. And I can see that. I can see that because I was that. I was a very annoying kid. I want to serve well. And sometimes I think I want this grand gesture where I'll just be able to do this one amazing thing for Jesus. But that's not where he's leading me. It's the small faithful act to listen a little longer, to ask another question, to try and love and see what Jesus sees. I want to keep growing. This last summer I had the thought that I'm about midway on my life projection, just about 50, and I started to think like, oh, I'm going to make it. Like I've been living life with Jesus, it's been great, I think I might make it. I might hold on, I might make it. I don't know if you thought that. I do. But I get more excited because the older I get, the more absolutely convinced I am that life with Jesus just is, you cannot beat it. You will not know love or grace or laughter or joy or purpose more anywhere else in the world than you will with Jesus. I get encouraged when I always think about Caleb. Our pastor loves Caleb. One of the spies that went into the promised land, he was 40, and he saw it and it was great. And then when they went to take the land, he was 80. And they said, "Who will go?" "So send me, I'll fight. At 80, I'm going to be fighting. And it's going to be great. And if I have this chance to live well, I want to die well." And I know that's not a happy thought, but nobody plans. But I do. I have this idea that maybe I'll have enough love, I'll have enough Jesus in my heart, that even in the midst of knowing that I'm about to enter into His kingdom, that I can suffer well. I'd love to be a witness to the nurses that tend to me in my hospital. If I'm blessed with the forewarning to know that I'm going to have a few months of suffering before I pass on, I think that would be great. I would love to be able to have the runway to say to folks, "This is how we say goodbye. We say so long." I would love to have that space to know that I'm leaving them with nothing left unsaid. Jesus is the way. Follow. I don't know how you arrived here today. I don't know what journey of life brought you here. I don't know if I've made any sense to you at all. I hope I have. But I know that Jesus does still get through our inability, our weakness, what we can't. He's willing to use anyone who answers the call to be faithful. Those men who spoke into my life had no clue. I finally got in touch with the man who bought me that plane ticket. And I told him, "Do you remember doing this? I asked you why you did it and you said it was an investment." And you know what he said? "Oh, I don't think he remembered doing it. It was his small act of faithfulness and it was my whole world." And so for wherever life's brought you, however you arrived here, I just want to encourage you to remain in His love and keep the faith. In Galatians, it talks about, "Do not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time, you will reap a harvest." I believe this. I believe this so much. I don't know if I looked around and measured the effort that life requires and am able to say with confidence, "Yes, it's worth all of it." But I am with Jesus. Jesus gives me that space every day to say there's nothing that's done in vain that's done for Him. And I can keep doing that. And so for whatever struggles life finds you in, for whatever place you're expending yourself and wondering if it's still worth it, I just want to encourage you to remain faithful. I don't get to see where these students will be right now, but I know that if they remain in Jesus, it's going to be great. And I'm looking forward. Because the older I get, the longer I get to serve, the more Jesus I see in the world around me. And that gives me the confidence to stand before you, to tell you, to trust your heart to His. Read our Bibles, pray every day, and let Him lead the way. I'm going to close in prayer. Jesus, I love you. You are the best of anything I have come to know in this world. Spirit of God, I pray that you would meet us where the questions of our heart are. You'd fill us with the assurance of knowing what it is to be loved by you. To see ourselves as you see us. I pray we'd be encouraged to live our lives for you, to see others the way you see them, to have confidence in the voice that says, "Yes, Jesus." And where we have questions, I pray you give us the courage to face them. There's so much we don't know, God. But I'm thankful that through your word, you've revealed your Son to us. and that is life. Thank you so much for giving us your word, for your people, for your church. You're a good God. Thank you so much. Bless us as we go. In Christ's name, amen.